Welcome to Bourbon Beards and Belvederes. I'm Adam.
And I'm Paul.
And I'm Jerry.
Today we got some more whiskey to drink, some more cigars to smoke, some more beard products to talk about. We're actually doing a review this week. No guest. You know, we're always thankful to our guests. We've been blessed to have an abundance of guests on this show, but sometimes it's just nice to sit and shoot the shit and talk about our products. So, as always, we're starting with our palate warmers, and I'm going to go with my top left here. That's Jerry. What you got there, brother?
Starting out with the Wheel Horse Bourbon, coming in at 101 proof, mash bill, 70 corn, 21 rye, 9 malted barley. And if that mash bill sounds familiar, because that's Green River or OZ Tyler or one of the other plenty of names that distillery has gone.
Yummy.
Been named over the years. Definitely one of my go-tos for 30, 35 bucks.
Paul, what you got?
I am starting off with the little Jim Beam single barrel. I like picking these up when I can find them for about 45 to 50 bucks. I get like, tend to get like cherry notes off these single barrels, which I don't really pick up in any other Beam products once they're, you know, batched. So really like this bottle.
Right on. Well, since today's whiskey is a 101 proof, and it is not the whiskey that Jerry is smoking or Jerry is drinking, I also opted to go with a 101. You can probably guess what it is. You've heard me talk about it 1,000 times. It is Wild Turkey 101. It is Old Faithful. It is my first love. It is one of the best whiskeys from one of the best distilleries in the world. These guys can do no wrong. I have no idea what the mash bill is, and I do not care. It is delicious. I've had many rough nights on this. You know, one of these hangovers the next morning was pretty rough. I've had plenty of tear in my beer situations where I was drinking Wild Turkey too. So good stuff. Good stuff. I'll tell you one of the craziest nights I ever had on this shit while I was drinking this shit. I was with a guy that I had just met. We worked together. I was living with my grandparents at the time. I was kind of down on my luck. He invited me over to his place to come chill. Got really drunk. Almost puked in his mom's car. Just barely made it into his driveway and got the door open before I, you know, puked all over the place. And then we watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Do not recommend watching Texas Chainsaw Massacre when you got the spins. Don't do it. So how are you guys feeling about the draft? And we talk about a lot of different shit on here. Paul and I are pretty avid football fans. Jerry likes football, but he's more of a hockey guy still.
Hockey, baseball.
I don't want to talk about hockey today. Caps are down 3-0 against the Rangers in the series. And
we're
out tonight.
Lightning are down 3-1 to the Panthers, so I feel you on that.
But the draft, I'm a Panthers fan, and I think it went as good as it could be. I mean, we addressed offensive line and defense and free agency, so first three picks were offense, so we got a questionable call on a receiver. Probably not the receiver I would have taken at that position, but I'm interested to see how he fits in. And then we picked probably the second, maybe the third best tight end in the draft and consensusly the number one running back in the draft. So given Bryce Young some weapons this year, and I don't know, we'll see. I was iffy on a couple of the picks, but I'm glad we went wide receiver, running back, tight end with the first couple of picks.
Jerry, did you pay much attention to Jacksonville's draft at all?
No, but I did see they picked up that monster from LSU.
Yeah.
I can't think of his name right now. Shit. I see him.
Brian Thomas. Yeah, Brian Thomas, wide receiver from LSU. He's going to be good. He's going to be real good. He's you know, everybody's talked about him and the top couple receivers in the draft as far as talent-wise, and I think pretty damn good landing spot with Jacksonville too, given Trevor Lawrence, another weapon. Oh, breaking news just hit my phone. Texans wide receiver Tank Dell was shot as an innocent bystander.
Damn.
Doesn't say his condition. Just like a little blurb that just popped up on my phone. That's crazy.
Hopefully he's all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt pretty good about you know, getting Keon Coleman, Cole Bishop, but you know, getting Ray Davis, I mean, 28th pick of the fourth round, that's a fucking steal right there. I think he probably should have gone in the second round, honestly, but I mean, I get why he didn't. But he's going to do some awesome things. I did hear that Josh Allen was talking specifically to Keon Coleman and saying that he wanted Keon Coleman. So, you know, he wanted to play with Keon Coleman. And so I would say that probably has a lot to do with why Keon Coleman ended up at Buffalo. And he's an awesome talent. Let's not, you know, I just didn't like how Buffalo went about it. Let's trade away both of our first pick rounds or first round picks and okay. Not pick up anybody until the second round. Like I think a lot of Buffalo fans like I was were, you know, sitting around like we had hemorrhoids, just, you know, couldn't fucking sit still. Like, you know, what the fuck are they doing? When are they going to do something that's worth doing? Like,
yeah, I think they knew that Keon Coleman would fall. He probably wasn't on anybody else's boards up that high with Adonai Mitchell still out there and couple others. So I think it was the right move. I get it. I mean, I hate, you know, you're about to make a pick and your team trades back, but what Carolina did it a few times too. We actually picked up second next year in a trade back. So I think that, yeah, it definitely was Josh Allen's guy because I want to say it was either the owner or the GM, somebody they had him when they were making the phone call to Keon Coleman. And they specifically said, our quarterback's going to love having you. So I think Allen had some input on that pick.
I'm sure he did.
Other teams did not give their quarterback input. Well, Atlanta Falcons.
Jesus Christ. What the? All right. We'll come back to that in a minute. Okay. I just want to get this out there before I forget what I was going to say. I would imagine that was probably part of how they convinced Josh Allen to take a lesser salary, you know, to renegotiate his contract and all that. They're probably like, well, we'll let you pick your next receiver come draft time. But yeah, the Falcons. And so not only did they not tell Kirk Cousins after they just gave Kirk Cousins a massive, 4-year contract. It's a lot of fucking money and
a million guaranteed, 180 is the contract.
Yeah. Yeah.
They can't get out. They can't get away from it until after year three.
Yeah. He's going to be the starter for the next 2 years. No question. And now this kid that's 23 years old is supposed to develop and potentially not play until he's almost 26, potentially. That's if, you know, Kirk Cousins, if they do try to get away from him, which I think the contract was, it was 4 years, right? So he's got fucking, I mean, that kid might sit there for until he's almost 28 years old before he actually gets to fucking play.
They said probably best case for him is 27.
Yeah. Starting. What the fuck? And they're going to pay him a lot of money. They're going to pay him a lot of money to sit there. That doesn't make any fucking sense at all. And Kirk Cousins was completely blindsided.
Yeah. It's the most questionable draft pick in years. And just being a fucking shit show of an organization, they still haven't came out and addressed their fans on why they did that. Like, do you have a plan to like explain to us the mentality on what the hell you were thinking when you, I mean, you could have traded back and probably got Penix in the second round by most people's, you know, mock drafts. Why would you take him so high? Why not trade back if that's your guy? The only thing they said so far that I saw is on their board, he was the second best quarterback in the draft.
I saw that. And I saw that part of the reason is because, and this isn't a reason in terms of strategy or plan or anything like that, but Arthur Blank wanted him. Like, why the fuck are we listening to owners when it comes to, like, owners are money men. That's it. They fucking sit over there and they collect their money and they're happy. They get a Super Bowl ring when their team wins. Other than that, they should just shut the fuck up. Like, why are we listening to the owner when it comes to that's a front office decision. And that's the only halfway explanation I've heard, is that Arthur Blank wanted him. So I don't fucking, doesn't make any goddamn sense to me. And Kirk Cousins, bless him, that guy, if there's anybody in the NFL right now that deserves to win a fucking Super Bowl, I mean, he ain't going to do it in Atlanta, but I think he at least deserves to be given a heads up on that kind of shit. What the fuck?
Yeah, that's I mean, just total disrespect in my mind, and that's the only way you can see it. But speaking to your point of owners who should step the fuck back, did you see the video of David Tepper, the Panthers owner, driving by a restaurant, or there was something on social media and a restaurant put on their billboard, let the GM and coach make the picks, pretty much is taking a shot at Tepper. And he went in there in the restaurant to try to talk to the people. It looked like it was a good nature. You know, he didn't go in aggressive. I think it was being funny, but he walks in and the guy at the front desk is wearing an Eagles hat, and he takes it off his head and sets it on the counter. And he asked to see the guy who did the sign. And unfortunately, they said that guy wasn't there that day. So he kind of had a laugh and walked out. But I thought that was pretty funny. People need to start calling out owners to take a seat, a back seat in this process.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not there they're there to make money decisions and fucking, you know, fund upgrades or whatever the fuck. So,
I mean, hey, John Elway, he can be in the room. Peyton Manning, when he buys a team, he inevitably will. He can be in the room, but these
guys are totally different. That they fucking played the game. They know what those decisions are based on and how they should be made. Somebody it's kind of like my personal opinion. If you're going to run for president, if you're going to be president, run the country, you should have served time in the military, like, or been a police officer or something of that nature. You know, same with football. If you're going to be an involved owner like that, you should have, you know, been drafted at some point. You should have played the game. And same is true all across the board, you know, basketball, football. So I did see, switching sports real quick, I saw that, oh hell, the Clippers owner he's funding a whole new arena for them. And this shit's fucking wild. You're not supposed to be any farther than like 35 seconds from a bathroom at any point. So like the whole basis for the way that he's designed and is building their arena is to get asses in seats, get asses back in seats as quickly as humanly possible. And then he threw in a little, he said that he couldn't see, the angle was fucked up from his current seat. So whenever his new seat, he wants to be able to see every single thing that occurs on the court from his courtside seat. Fine, if you're funding the shit yourself, like he's paying for it entirely himself, you're doing all that shit and you own the team, whatever, that's your right, that's perfectly fine. But yeah, the rest of it, like, one part that I thought was kind of fucked up is that there's a specific section where no opposing team fans are allowed to sit at all. So like, I mean, that's not really capitalism, is it? You know, you buy the ticket, you can put your ass in the seat, no matter who you're cheering for. But anyway,
usually stuff like that is for the camera. There's a lot of teams that do that, especially during playoff season. And it's so when the main camera is spanning either the field, the court, the ice, whatever sport it is, those sections are mainly your fans or just plain Jane t-shirts. They don't want to, if you're Carolina playing Atlanta, you don't want to be spanning over and seeing all these red jerseys or something like that. That's one of the reasons. They'll allow other fans to sit there. You just can't wear their jersey or their colors, basically.
Yeah, that's specifically what they talked about was their logo, yeah, their colors, their whatever the fuck. But, and that makes sense, I suppose. Thank you for explaining that, because I had not considered that. Still don't like it, but nobody asked me. So Jerry's been sitting there, he's been nosing that whiskey pretty aggressively. So let's get on to the whiskey of the week here, guys.
Yeah.
And Jerry sent this out, so why don't you tell us about it, brother?
So I went with the Wheel Horse Bourbon to start out, because we are going with their cigar blend. It's also 101 proof, same mash bill, the 70-21-9. This one is finished in sherry, port, and Armagnac casks. from their website, it's, well, on the back of the bottle says 4 years. On their website, it says 4 to 5 year Kentucky straight, and then finished in a combination of Armagnac, sherry, and pork casks. And it's in the it finishes for roughly 6 to 8 months, and then bottled at 101 proof, non-chill filtered. Yeah, I think this thing has a fantastic nose. I picked this one up for $42.99 off their website. I think the few stores that actually got it, because I think there's only like 3,000 bottles of this one that got released with this release. I think the stores were selling it for about $38-$40. So at that same price range, slightly higher than the normal Wheelhorse, which before we go on, this is a great budget cigar blend. It's nothing like the Magna cigar blends or anything like that. But then again, you're spending $40 versus, what is it, 200 something bucks now for the Magnus. But so it's not comparable to that, but I still think it's pretty damn good.
All right. Well, Paul, what are you getting on the nose, brother?
Fruit, red fruit, like berries or raspberries. That's
absolutely
punched me in the nose, and I wasn't expecting that for a cigar blend. Obviously coming from those finished barrels, I assume. But yeah, I mean, that's the overwhelming note. I'm not picking up a whole lot else. Maybe a little bit of like breadiness and a little bit of vanilla on the back, but it's that red fruit right in the nose. And it's almost like it's like raspberry, more so than just a blend of red fruit. It's definitely raspberry.
I definitely get a raspberry and an apple. Like, but it's definitely a red apple, but it's a peeled red apple. If that... There, to me, there's a decided difference between the way the peel smells and the way the flesh actually smells.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm getting is that red apple. Jerry, what are you getting?
No, that raspberry definitely pops out, but I also get like this plum note in there. Not, it's like this unsweetened, almost tart in there, which raspberry falls under. Every once in a while, I get a little hint of like a milk chocolate, but it's not every whiff. It's just sporadically when it wants to pop out. But yeah, those dark red fruits just massively overpower this nose.
That plum comes through on the mouth for me, and that sumbitch is dry. Now, I will tell you that earlier I was making the promo video for this particular episode, and I poured some into this glass, and I slugged it back the entire pour, and I was convinced that this was Amberana. And when we first got on when Jerry and I first got on the call before Paul got on, I was like, it's not overwhelmingly Amberana, but there is Amberana. If you drink a whole bunch of it at once, you might get that as well. Then again, me not knowing the finish on it, that might have just been what I expected, because the last few cigar batches that I picked up of anything have been done in Amberana. I have a couple upstairs that are done and Oloroso, and I can't even remember what else. This is really good. Back to the dryness, that shit is dry as a popcorn fart. Like it just completely sucks all the moisture out of my mouth, but it is very pleasant, very delicious.
Yeah, that that berry carries through definitely from the front of the palate for me. But then I'm picking up that rye grain, and it dries out real quick. On the finish, it kind of transitions over to more of that rye, but then there's an oaky leather to it, kind of finishes, and it finishes short too, so it's not a long finish, but very good. I mean, for $40-$45, I mean, this is a fantastic for that price range.
Yeah, that rye spice for me is more of like the dirty, earthy style rye that fades into like that leathery, whatever you want to, notes you want to call it. But from Wheelhorse, they say the nose is dark fruit, such as cherry and plum. There you go. Light undertones of tobacco. I don't get any of those tobacco notes on the nose. It's just straight fruit. They say the palate is sweet brown sugar, which is balanced with rich coffee before revealing earthy notes of leather and dark chocolate. Yeah. Surprised they don't mention the fruits on that one. And then the finish lingers with complex flavors of mulling spice and roasted almonds.
Going from the cigar to this pour, I get that brown sugar, that sweetness. It definitely picks up the sweetness out of this whiskey coming from pulling on the cigar to taking a sip. which changes it, but still works nicely together. But it kind of takes away a little bit of that berry that I really like on the palate. So I'm kind of torn on what I like better, going straight from the cigar or cleansing my palate with this seltzer water I got right here and then going back to the bourbon. It definitely changes it pretty drastically for that first note for me.
Yeah, when I go from the cigar to this, I get the almonds. I don't get the almonds any other time. And I think part of that is because the dry aspect of this whiskey. And when I say dry, this dry, it is unlike any other dry I've ever had in a whiskey. It definitely signifies that it took on a lot of the qualities of some of those wine that, you know, where it was finished. Because I've had some wines that are, you know, they linger. And then I've had some that were dry as hell. And this is dry as hell. This is, I mean, it's like the Sahara in my mouth after I drink it. And I like it. And I like it because even though it finishes quickly and it's a dry finish, I still have some of the flavors in my mouth. And it doesn't require there to be moisture in my mouth. Which I feel like can affect the way that you taste the flavors. And the way that I'm tasting the flavors here is a little bit more pure because it's just flavors, not flavor plus whatever else. But when I go from the cigar to the whiskey or the whiskey to the cigar, whatever the combination may be, that's where the almonds really shine for me. If I lay out the cigar for a bit, then I can go back and get some of those berries, which I am enjoying. So I kind of see where Paul's coming from.
Yeah. When I go from the cigar to the pour, for me, the rye spice or the spice in the pour ramps up for me, but definitely pulls more of that nutty earthiness and kills a lot of the sweetness. The brown sugar or vanilla, whatever note you want to call it, it's more of like a unsweetened version of it. For me, this cigar cuts down a lot of the sweetness from this and it ramps up the spice on the back end. But knowing what this cigar is kind of makes a little sense for that, but we'll get into that here in a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I said, again, for the price, it's a definite buy.
They also, I missed out on it mainly because I didn't notice it, but they also had a toasted finish, Wheel Horse toasted finish.
Hmm.
There was 2,000 bottles produced for that one, 4+ years, same mash bill, and then finish in a toasted barrel. That one as well goes for $42.99 on the website. So hopefully the next batch I can get in on that one because that one sounds pretty damn good.
Somewhat related, but a different brand entirely. Paul sent me something earlier, and I'm sure he sent it to you too, Jerry. Did you see the old granddad 16-year?
16.
Ooh,
yeah, I don't expect that one to be as budget friendly as all the other OGDs.
Take my money.
Yes, I don't expect to be. In fact, I would say if I had to guess, at least at first, it'll probably be a distillery only release or in the barreled and boxed, which the jury's still out on whether or not that's, you know, whether the juice is worth the squeeze. The first round of that, absolutely. I got 2 bottles of Little Book. The next round, not so much. They sent me a motherfucking Basil Hayden and a goddamn Knob Creek 15 where I had 5 bottles of Knob Creek 15 store pick at 120 proof. And they sent me a Knob Creek 15 at 100 proof. And it didn't even have the damn wooden box with it. Come on, Jim Beam. What the fuck are you doing? So I canceled my membership after that. The next one, I believe, was Harden's Creek is what they sent out, and kind of upset that I missed out on that. That would have definitely been worth the money. But this one here, yeah, take my money. I'm probably going down to Clermont whenever this comes out, because I would imagine that it'll probably be available there. I remember when Old Tub used to be distillery only, right? And you'd go down there and you'd get, you know, the 200 milliliter flask bottle that they had, and I think it was like $35 for that fucking little thing. Now that's what they sell the 750 for, and it's got wide distribution. But it's good for what it is, I suppose, but it's not anything terribly special. But at that time it seemed that way because it was the only place you could get it. And for anybody that doesn't know, hasn't been, Jim Beam Distillery is worth going to just to fucking go and walk around. You don't have to buy shit. You don't even have to do a tour. Just go walk around the grounds. Holy shit. Jim Beam, Maker's Mark, Buffalo Trace, probably the three most beautiful distillery grounds. Willett's pretty fucking nice. They've retooled all that, redone that.
Yeah. As much as I'm not a fan of their whiskeys, Castle and Key.
Oh, Castle and Key's gorgeous. Ability. Castle and Key is gorgeous. But the thing is that Jim Beam, Maker's Mark, Buffalo Trace, Willett, a lot of it's modernized. A lot of it is more well-kept. There's still a lot of ruins at Castle and Key that they haven't gotten around to fixing yet because, you know, capital, they got to have the capital to do that kind of shit. But for what they've done and what they've been able to restore thus far, it's absolutely, the thing is the campus at Castle and Key is not as big as it is at Maker's Mark or Jim Beam. They've got, it's more spread out. They've got more room. They've got more shit for you to look at. So yeah, definitely worth, but when this comes out, it'll definitely be worth going to check out. You know, unfortunately, I don't think that you can smoke on the grounds there. So no cigars, but definitely worth checking out and getting some of their whiskeys. They've got one of the best tasting experiences there that I can imagine. They take all of their expressions of Jim Beam and stick them on the bar and say, pick what you want. Now you can only get so many by law, but they say, pick what you want. So, but speaking of cigars, let's move on to this particular cigar. So I sent this out after coming across a bundle on jrcigars.com. Again, we are not sponsored by jrcigars.com. If jrcigars.com would like to sponsor us, you can reach me at 859-555-5555. Or you can reach me, you know, by email. I believe that there's a way that we can arrange that if you really, you know, we'll figure it out. Instagram too. Reach out on Instagram. You can reach us all at Instagram. You can reach Jerry and Paul by email too. I don't know their phone numbers. I just met these guys yesterday, so you'll have to ask them for their phone numbers. But
867-5309.
So anyway, I found this. It was a bundle of 20, and I don't recall what the price was when I purchased it, but right now you can get it for $91.99 on jrcigars.com. It's a savings of $10. If you give them $40 a year, they will ship to you for free, and that can be one cigar or it can be crates of many. Then again, they've got one of the coolest things, the Cigar of the Month Club. They send out six really awesome cigars. It's $30 a month. That ends up averaging out to $5 a cigar. And these cigars they send you are well worth the $5. They're actually a whole lot more than that if you look them up, but it's definitely worth looking into. So this one is a wrapper type, is a San Andreas Maduro. The binder is Nicaraguan. The filler is Nicaraguan. I've said many times I'm a sucker for a Nicaraguan cigar. That also happens to be the origin of this. It says it's a medium to full. I would say it falls somewhere in the middle. I would think it would be closer to medium than full if you were to put it on a scale, but that's just me. Wrapper shade is Maduro. It's got a ring gauge of 50, and I believe the details are off on this because, well, no, probably not. It says the length is 5 inches. I feel like this one was actually 6.
I think this was the 6x50.
Do what?
I think this was the 6x50. I don't have the cellophane wrapper. I threw it out, but I think it was 6x50.
Yeah, I think so too. Here it is right here. Yep, it is 6x50. So the cigar that we're talking about today is the Asylum Schizo. These are cool as hell. These different types of cigars that they make.
Have you looked up at their origin story, basically?
I've got it right in front of me. As a matter of fact, I had it right in front of me, and it has switched over to work.
You have Christian Ayora, I think is how you say his name.
Mm-hmm.
We had some of his cigar. We had one of his cigars, I think it was last month ago, the CLE Camacho, or not Camacho, one of the CLEs. But so he was working, and I guess he was like managing the Camacho cigar brand. And then they ended up selling it off to Davidoff. And a guy, Tom Lazuka, was working for Christian Brands. Once he sold it off, he had a non-compete clause for however long. Once that ended, he wanted to start his own. That's why he sold it off. He wanted to start his own little thing. He came up with the CLE. Tom came over from the other brand. He wanted to do stuff different looking. And his words were, he wants to do big cigars. I found it a little for him. And the reason I did the 70 ring gauges was that when I traveled the country for Camacho and Davidoff, I would see empty 70 boxes on the shelves, but they were never in stock. I would ask the retailers, do these things sell? All the stores would say, yeah, when we have them, but we never have them. So his thing was that he wanted to do these big ones because they never have them. And Christian basically told him that's the stupidest idea in the world. And thinking that Tom was crazy, he named the whole line of Asylum. So it's a cool little story behind the whole lineup, which is why they had, I think they just released one on Valentine's Day or something like that this year, was a 9x90. Damn thing was a fucking baseball bat.
Yeah, they've got some big ass cigars for sure. And so, yeah, so these are made by the CLE Cigar Company, which CLE happens to be Christian's initials, Christian Luis Iroa. They make CLE cigars, Iroa cigars, and Asylum cigars. Like Jerry mentioned, they've got some big damn cigars. And these Asylum cigars, they've always got a different variation on the logo, you know, different colors, whatever, but it's a pretty cool looking little skull. I've got Schizo here. I've got Insidious over there. There are several others with, you know, some kind of, you know, crazy name. So they've got the Asylum 13 Connecticut, the Medulla Oblongata, the Ogre Pandemonium, April Fools, which was the 90x9. They've got Nyctophilia, Asylum Sensorium, Big Time Tommy. They've got the, you know, just different, a lot of different types that they make under that brand. They got a cool ass box. My Insidious came in a black wooden black wooden box here. These are 50x5 and they have a sweetened cap and a sweetened wrapper, to be honest, and not really something that we were looking for. But the box is cool as shit. And the cigar itself is a pretty good smoke if sweetened caps and wrappers are your thing. So pretty damn cool. Goes well with this whiskey. Nice little pairing, I feel.
Yeah, it definitely affected the whiskey that we talked about before. I agree. It's a pretty good cigar. It started off a little bit, I don't want to say harsh, but I was getting a little bit of bitter and a more fuller flavor to it, but it's mellowed out quickly. I'm still in the first third and it's mellowing out back down to around the medium range. I would say there's nice notes of I want to say oaky maybe, but there's a little bit of a sweetness there too. I finished the whiskey about 5 minutes ago, so I haven't poured the next one yet. So I'm just smoking the cigar on its own, and I'm still getting a little bit of sweetness. So I think there's some of that in there too. Got a great burn line. It started off a little uneven, but since caught up. I love the label. That teal ring really pops. I mean, that's something you'll definitely see, you know, off the shelf in a store that's going to grab your eye. And, you know, all the labels in this line are really cool, but I love that teal. That's something that's kind of unique.
Yeah, you don't see that often. Yeah, this burn line is some of the straightest I've seen. Mine started off a little wonky, caught up, but that was probably my fault because when I was walking outside with it, I dropped it and it cracked probably the first half inch of the foot. But once we got past that, it caught up and it's been good. Nice draw, nice even draw all the way through. I'm coming about that to the second third, halfway through the second third. Yeah, it's a solid cigar. At first, same thing. I was getting that, I don't want to call it harsh, but definitely a full-bodied, heavy cigar with a lot of black pepper and whatnot. It's now fading into I'm getting like a Baker's chocolate, that unsweetened, almost bitter chocolate. The pepper's still there. As Paul was saying, I've been trying to figure it out this whole cigar. There's that sweetness in there. I can't figure out exactly what it is, but I am getting some more like the leather notes in there as well, which I know some people can't stand hearing tasting leather, but if you've ever been into a leather shop or a Western wear store, you've tasted it. It gets in your mouth, that scent gets in your mouth, and you know what it tastes like. But yeah, this is going well with this Wheel Horse. Like I said, it's Wheel Horse by itself is a nice little, or the cigar blend, nice little sweetness on the pour. With this cigar, it kind of mellows out that sweetness, so it's definitely a nice little contrast.
And you said these are like $5 a piece?
No, I don't recall how much I bought them for, but they're 90-something dollars. 90. Yeah.
For 20. So, yeah. So, 95, 99 for 20. You're looking at seven or $4.80. $4.79 for one of them.
I mean, you can't go wrong for $5 for one.
I guess it was $5. I didn't do the math, but yeah, no, that's a badass little cigar for $5 for sure.
Yeah, for $5, this is killer. I didn't do the math on this one until just then. That's all. Depending on the size, you get them from at $91.99 up to I think it's like $120, $119, $118 on JR's. Other websites might have different prices. So I saw that. I just didn't actually narrow it down to per cigar, but these are for boxes of 20, which comes out to, like I said, just under $5, and that's killer for $5.
All right, guys, well, let's move on to this beer product. Jerry's on a limited time frame today, so we need to get the show on the road here. Jerry, tell us what we're talking about here, brother.
I found these guys by just like searching around. They have some great carrier blend oils, but they have two in particular that I've never heard of before. So I took a shot and picked these guys up. This is from the Bearded Mac. I grabbed the, I think it's like an 11 pack or 12 pack scent sample. It has all their samples in it. I sent the guys two or three samples. I don't remember. So yeah, right now they have two different carrier oil blends. If you have where'd it go? Camellia seed oil, metal foam seed oil, fractionated coconut oil, broccoli seed oil, kakui nut oil, castor oil, and then you have your fragrance and vitamin E. And then the other blend, instead of the kakui, or I'm probably messing that one up. We'll talk about that oil in a second. But instead of that one, you have hemp seed oil. And I reached out to the brand to basically just see if there was a reason or anything like that. They said they're in the process removing hemp seed from their oil blend so that the oils, so all the oils right now that have hemp seed, once they sell out, they'll update them to the new kakui. And then I asked if there's a reason for it, or if it's just kind of changing up. They responded saying it's something that they've been wanting to do for a while. He's a tinkerer, so he just had to do it. But the main reason was because there's been issues with international shipping with the word hemp in the description. I guess some places outside the US, they don't, it's either not showing up or it's something that they hide from the residents, however it is. So they're phasing out the hemp seed oil and going with the kakui oil. I've liked these guys. I was a big fan of these guys. It's beards felt great. One of the scents I have is the Sleepwalker, which is like a lavender vanilla, I believe it is. I'll put it in, I don't know, right after dinner, and the next morning I'm waking up and the beard's still nice and soft and feeling real good. So what'd you guys think about it?
Yeah, I like them. They're definitely, you know, first time I used it, it's definitely on the thinner side of oils, which I really like. I've said before, I think thinner oils go well with fuller beards. I don't really like thicker oils, so I like them a lot. Jerry sent me the Roaring Twenties, which is a bay rum leather tobacco. That's the scent I like the most. And then Lights Out, which is, they say it's dapper, woody, and aromatic. And I had Icy, which is eucalyptus, peppermint, and tea tree oil, which I really like that scent too. The scents are not overpowering. They're right where they need to be. They last. My beard feels great. Soft. I was curious. I was looking into it before. They used broccoli seed oil, which I don't think I've ever seen in a beard oil blend. And I was reading up. It says it helps with like softening your beard and getting the tangles out. So I think that's a cool addition. I have, like I said, I don't think I've ever seen anybody use broccoli seed oil.
Yeah, with the little research I did, I think they were, if they weren't the first one, they were one of the first ones to use that one. And to go along with the broccoli seed, it's considered a protective oil, meaning they don't necessarily penetrate into the hair or the skin. They basically sit there and they coat the skin and beard and give it that silky, smooth, nice feeling. So, which it also has, there's a bunch of other antioxidants and whatever else in there to do what it needs to do for the skin and hair. But that's like, if I was to guess, that's one of the main reasons why you wanted to do it, to give that nice feel to it. And the other one is the Kikui oil, nut oil. It's from Hawaii. It's one of their, I think it's the, let me double check. It's the state tree, the Kikui, however you want to say it, is the state tree of Hawaii. And this is rich in vitamins and supposed to be an ultra hydrating fatty acids with more antioxidants and all that other stuff. So the combination of those two, I don't know if they actually do much, but it feels like it. Beard feels great.
Yeah. And for that broccoli, to kind of be a topical type of it, I put it on this morning and it doesn't come off. So don't get, like you would think, saying that it doesn't absorb, you would think your beard would feel greasy to the touch, but it doesn't. It doesn't at all. So no, from the limited use of these oils, I like them. I mean, they got a full line of products from conditioners, washes, soaps, balms. They got tools and accessories like brushes and combs and stuff. One thing I did see, which I don't know if I've ever noticed before, but they have a nice groomsman gift pack. Just like if you're getting married and you got groomsmen, it's like, and they all got beards, it's like a nice little pack. It's got different labels on it. It's like pretty cool little presentation for a groomsmen gift too. And it can be engraved and all that stuff. So I thought that was kind of neat. But yeah, overall, I really like them. The prices are right there with kind of industry standard for $20 for 1 ounce oil and $20 for 1 ounce or 2 ounce butter. Yeah, I definitely recommend them. All the shipping is free over $75. Right now, they have select beard oils at 30% off on their website. And that 11 oil sampler pack that Jerry got looks like it's marked down to $44 right now. So that's definitely a buy if you want to get introduced to this brand.
Yeah, I agree with everything you guys have said. This is my particular favorite. So Jerry sent me the Gambling Mac or the Gambling Mac. Deadwood Mac and Cigarwood Mac, and all three of them are great. Gambling Mac is what I used today, and I really liked it. None of these are going to announce you. You know, they're not going to announce your arrival, meaning that the scents aren't terribly overpowering. Somebody might have to get kind of close to you to actually smell it, but, you know, the utilitarian aspect of a beard oil should be, you know, it's about you. It's about how it makes your face feel, how it helps your beard, that kind of thing. So the scent should be pleasing to you first and foremost, because you're the one that's wearing it on your face. And yeah, the scents are very pleasing. One thing that I did notice about these is that the labels are different, but the same. It's got the same logo on it, but with different color combinations. From bottle to bottle, the labels differ. They're the same style, but the color schemes are different. Some of them have pinstripes at the top and the bottom. Some of them don't. That's pretty cool. The variants there, the variation in those. I think these guys are doing some good stuff. I look for them to keep doing good stuff. They've been on the market for a while. It says right on the bottle, 2019. It is now 2024. Unbelievably, 2024, and we don't have flying cars, but we do have awesome beard oils. So be on the lookout for these guys, because they're doing some good things, and I think they're gonna be around for a while doing good things for for men in our beards. So,
yeah, that label aspect, the different color schemes and whatever, it's real nice, especially for these little sample guys where at least myself and I know you guys either keep it in a drawer or keep it in a little box. Some of these samples are all the same label and just either handwritten or just have the name printed on it. At least these are colorful. You'd be like, all right, I remember the one that I liked was yellow or whatever. Go grab the yellow one, which made it a little bit easier in the morning, especially when I'm half asleep and trying to get to work. But for myself, I kept the tropical, let's see. Yeah, the tropical storm, which is like a mango, lime, teakwood, mahogany, like tropical. I didn't think I would like that one, but once I put it in the beard, it smelled fantastic. And then, like I said, the Sleepwalker, the Corner Mac, which is like a bergamot, mandarin, orangey cologne scent. That's probably one of my favorites. The Command Mac, which is like a citrus minty thing going on. But there's, I don't know, it says it's with lime, mint, ginger, lily, and vanilla. I don't know if it's the ginger or lily, but there's a weird scent in there. That's the one I'm wearing today. So it's not a bad one. It's just there's something in there at first that I'm not crazy. Favorite one so far has been the Black Mint Maduro Mac. I almost sent this one to Adam because I know he likes the tobacco scents, but screw him because I'm keeping this one because it smells fantastic. I would send it to you, but it is empty. Warm tobacco, black tea, and mint. The mint is nowhere like the mint that Paul likes with that eucalyptus and all that. It's just like a nice, like you could feel it in your beard and your skin, like the little fresh, like minty, not burning, but you could feel it. But then that tobacco and mint or the tea just sits around all day. That one is probably my favorite out of those. But yeah, big fan of these guys. I smelt all of them before I sent them out to the guys just to kind of see what they are. I almost did send the icy, I think that's what it's called, the icy one to Adam just for shits and giggles, but I knew he wouldn't use it. So I sent it to Paul instead because I know he actually likes that kind of stuff. But yeah, that going back to that roaring 20s that Paul said, that one and this Black Mint Maduro, those two are probably my favorite two scents out of the whole bunch. So,
and some of the good stuff. The sample bottles, they're 5 mil samples, but they all have droppers in them. So that's definitely something to note because that's a big difference for me.
Going back to that, the 1 ounce oils do not have, they have the reducer top. So if you want the dropper top, either you got to repurpose it from another bottle or they sell them for $1.99 each. So that's something to remember when you're ordering.
Right on. Well, let's move on to this Pours on Me because Jerry and I both had this, but I don't believe that Paul has, and I would like to get his 2 cents. So, I sent this out. Jerry had this here when he was at my house last summer. The backstory is I was training at a specific distillery and how do I put this? Experimental bottles were found in a shed and the head distiller asked the master distiller if it should all be put back into the still. And the master distiller said, no, give it to the guys in the still house. And that's where I was training. I was actually an employee there. And that's a whole different story why that didn't work out. But at any rate, boxes appeared and we were told to take them home. I have those upstairs. This is not one of those bottles. So in addition to actual finished bourbons that had been aged, there were bottles and bottles and bottles and bottles and bottles of White Dog. And all of those were going back into the still. I rescued this bottle with permission from the head distiller and brought it home. Now this bad boy, it comes in at 138.8 proof. When I brought it home, it was White Dog. It has had a oak spiral in it since I brought it home. And that was a few years ago. Mash bill, 65 corn, 28 wheat, and 15% malted barley. It was bottled January 16th, 2019. But it was bottled right out of the still. It wasn't barreled at all. Again, it was White Dog when I got it. Now, it's interesting to talk about that particular process because we had hundreds, literally hundreds. And I mean, they range from 200 milliliter all the way up to 750s of White Dog. Different types of White Dog. There were rye, there was weeded, there were all these different, whatever, different mash bills, and hundreds and hundreds. And we emptied every one of those bottles out and put them back into the low wines box and let it run through the whole process all over again to strip them and be put into finished product. But I got to say that this is, it surprised me very pleasantly. I'm glad that I rescued this bottle. I have a little less than half of the bottle left, unfortunately. And I also rescued a bottle of 750 of some rye from this particular distillery. And that was supposed to be distributed amongst Patreons of a different podcast. And those motherfuckers forgot that I brought it to them and let any Tom, Dick, and Harry that walked through their motherfucking door drink it. And by the time they... By the time like I reached out and said, "Hey, where the fuck is this? Why hasn't it come out yet?" Said, "Oh, we forgot." And half the fucking bottle was gone. And 10 people got samples of that fucking bottle. So I'm still furious. And if you hear this and the story rings a bell for you, you either know those folks or you are those folks. And if you are those folks, fuck you. But at any rate, Paul, I know what Jerry thinks about this. Jerry's had it before. Paul, Let's hear what you got, brother.
So on the nose, I'm getting cinnamon and caramel. Yeah. I get that like overwhelming, and I don't get any graininess that I always get from this distillery on the nose of almost all of their products.
Now, keep in mind, every one of the bottles that I have, because of the situation this distillery was in at the time, were sourced. Right. So.
Yeah, but the nose is fantastic. Caramel. Cinnamon. It does not nose at 138.8 proof at all.
Or drink.
Yeah, I'll get to that here shortly. But yeah, the nose is fantastic.
Well, Jerry, I know what you think, but our audience doesn't. Please tell us.
So, like Adam said, this is a weeder, and I am a big fan of weeders, except for this distillery. I do like their rye and their other products. But for some reason, they're weeded stuff I'm not a fan of. This stuff, it's if they bottled this stuff, I would buy this stuff all day. But yeah, I don't want to do detail, but they're weeded stuff I'm not a fan of. This stuff is good.
Paul, how about that mouth? How about that palate?
Yeah, the caramel definitely comes through on the palate, but there's honey. There's like a honey sweetness that's underlying. And it coats your mouth being such a high proof. It's creamy. There's a little bit of that cinnamon, but I think that's mainly on the nose. But yeah, it's like honey forward for me. But the mouthfeel, just to start the show, I mean, the mouthfeel is fantastic.
And it's crazy that this was unaged except for that little spiral.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this is fantastic.
Yeah, that little spiral made all the difference in the world. Honestly, but the spiral wouldn't, if the distillate was shit, the spiral wouldn't make a bit of a difference, honestly. So that being said, it's almost unfair to even have it on here because we can't really talk about where it came from or, you know, who the distillery is or anything like that. But it is worth talking about because it's so damn good. I've got some bourbon upstairs. I've got some rye, all from this same situation, because I left with like 8 bottles. Now, not all of them. There were only 2 750s. There were 3 200 milliliter bottles, and then there were 300 milliliter bottles, 350. I can't remember. They're an odd size, but it's so damn good. It's so fucking good. So anybody that's listening, if you're wondering, you know, maybe we'll tell you at some point. Maybe we won't. We certainly won't right now. But what you get to hear right now are three friends enjoying some damn good whiskey that can't be enjoyed anywhere outside of the confines of my home unless I fucking give you some and send it your way. So too fucking bad. But it's really good though, right? Like it's totally out of box, out of pocket for this particular distillery.
Yeah.
I can't say that I've ever had any weeded products produced by this company except for this particular bottle. So, you know, whatever experience Jerry has had in the past, interested to know when you can tell me when we're not recording so that I can go find those. But there are other products for the most part I enjoy. There's some that are almost universally maligned in the whiskey game as far as whiskey drinkers, collectors, and fans go. But there are others that, you know, fly under the radar a lot of times that, you know, they're sleepers. And at some point down the road, we'll tell you by name what those are. We'll just got to make sure it's far enough removed from this particular episode and this story that no connections can be made. But it's a family that's been, you know, they've been involved in the whiskey game for a long fucking time. They're not newbies. They're not somebody that just picked it up and decided to take off running with it. I mean, they, you know, they're as much a part of whiskey history in the state of Kentucky or America flat out as anybody else as the Beams or, you know, certainly as much as the guys that own Heaven Hill. What are their names? Forgot what their fucking names are.
You keep talking, you're going to give this away anyway. So
yeah, no. I'm not. I'm definitely not. Anyway. Yeah. They make some good stuff. They make some good stuff. I would like to find those weeders that Jerry's had. So at any rate, yeah, this is good stuff. This is good stuff. But that 138 will sneak up on you.
Yeah, well.
So. All right, guys. So I think that wraps up another episode of Bourbon Beards and Belvederes. Make sure to check out all these products. You can find Wheel Horse at wheelhorsewhiskey.com. You can find these cigars, the Asylum Cigars, at clecigars.com. You can find the beard products at thebeardedmacgroomingco.com. And you can find us at bourbonbeardsandbelvederes.com. Bourbon Beards, at Bourbon Beards and Belvederes on Instagram, at BURBN Beards Belvederes on TikTok. We're also on Facebook, but we don't really use it all that much. As always, support your veterans, support your children, give in any way you can, and let's take care of those that need to be taken care of and help out those that need the help. So until next week, cheers.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, guys.
Bourbon Beards and Belvederes is produced by Adam Bolden, Paul Rousseau, and Jerry Ullman. Editing by Adam Bolden. Music by Ryan Johnson. You can find the links to all our social media accounts on our website at bourbonbeardsandbelvederes.com. As always, enjoy your bourbon and cigars responsibly. Cheers!